Two humorous nurses would like to acknowledge the true custodians of the land in which we record our podcast, the Yorta Yorta people.
We pay our respects to elders past and present and extend our respects to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders listening today. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land.
Two humorous nurses with Kelly and Alicia.
Podcast that occasionally brings you facts.
Welcome to Two Humorous Nurses, where we plan to bring you funny, informal, conversational chat about all things nursing.
It's deep dive time. I want to say it's Kelly's deep dive because for whatever reason I can't be bothered doing deep dives. And
You're probably so good at it though.
Yeah, I actually
Except
feel like
that we would just get every single little detail.
And my child wouldn't be fed for 24 hours. we've had a lot of requests for this one. I don't think there's a nurse out there who hasn't heard of Lucy Letby. We were pretty hesitant to cover this one, actually, for a lot of reasons. So, but we understand that there's a lot of people that want to know more. So here it is.
I don't think we've ever had as many requests, as many forwards of articles or like
have you heard of this nurse?
No, I haven't. And I always say I'm gonna do it, but I just need time. And I like truly did need time.
And you need to be in a good place mentally, don't you? I don't know if you've gone too hard on the deaths.
So I'm a NICU mum, so I can understand how those parents must have felt in the NICU, right?
Yeah.
So firstly, you've literally just given birth and you're separated from your baby.
Yeah.
So even if you go, I don't even remember the first time I met Amelia. I have a photo of it, but I don't recall it because I was quite sick. So I can understand about that time.
And you wouldn't be the only woman who's had a baby and been really unwell.
And even if you're, even like Amelia was not sick, right? So there was no fear of her not being okay.
Yeah.
But it's still so stressful.
Oh, absolutely.
And what I can't understand is how it must be. I can obviously have empathy, because I'm a nurse, but a mum, is how hard it must be if your baby does collapse unexpectedly or dies, right? I can't understand that. Yeah. And I hope I never have to understand that.
Yeah.
But these are parents of like premature babies who are only days old.
Yeah.
So it's awful. Anyway, I decided because of that fact, and no one really needs to, like, we don't need to do the babies. We've never done, we were just saying this before, we've never, when we do these nurses who kill or anything like that, we never focus on the victims. We always focus on the nurse, the person who's done the killing, right?
Yeah.
So I decided to keep this deep dive about Lucy Letby. And less about how the babies died or almost died. There are other podcasts out there that cover it in great detail, and I'll link it in the show notes, but the trial podcast, the Lucy Letby trial, covers every baby in an episode each.
Wow.
And it covers the trial week to week. So the trial spanned for 10 months. It was one of the biggest trials the UK's ever had.
Wow.
And they go into the detail of every single baby.
I can't even watch true crime shit anymore since having Ollie.
Oh, really?
Like, I can't watch, like, you know, anything about where women or children are killed. Like, I read an article about some woman who died protecting her children and I was hysterical for days. Like, I just haven't been able to bring myself to that
place. I guess we change, don't we? Like, it is true. Everything about us changes when we have a baby.
Yeah. But I used to be like pretty, not obsessed, but I'd go through like periods of watching like, you know, really heavy documentaries and stuff. But I just haven't, probably haven't got the time.
No.
But also like, you know, quick to get emotional and that kind of thing now. And but I'm glad that we've kind of, that you've gone down this road because I had said to you for ages, I'm not ready for this.
I know. And Jess was exactly the same.
I don't know if I can do that one.
But I don't think I was. I mean, I listened to the trial podcast in real time, right? So I listened to it week to week as the trial was happening. And I obviously knew Lucy Letby, she killed premature babies, right? I knew that.
Yeah.
And then that very first episode when they spoke about the age of that baby, I was like, fuck. She killed babies. It hadn't registered in my brain. Like, she killed babies that were like, that shouldn't have even been alive yet. Mm. So, not alive, born. We're obviously alive.
Yeah.
But it didn't register in my head until that very moment. And it was funny because while I listened to it, I really did. My brain, I think, just sort of blacked out that information and I didn't really take it in as newborn babies. Yeah, I just sort of thought about them as children or as babies. As
anonymous humans.
Yeah, which we're pretty good at doing as nurses, good at just making people their into diagnosis
gray,
or whatever.
Grey shapes.
Yeah. So, Lucy Letby. Lucy was born on the 4th of January 1990 in Hereford. I hope I say that right. In Hereford in the United Kingdom, obviously.
Hereford's a type of cow.
That's what I keep thinking in my brain. Anyway. To country John things. And I feel like it's in the country, Hereford. Yeah, anyway, sure. Doesn't matter. I don't know. Someone let us know. John and Susan Letby. Apparently her birth was a difficult one and she'd grown up with the gratefulness to the nurses who helped to save her. This played a pivotal role in her wanting to become a nurse. She always had a close relationship with her parents and was an only child.
These only children.
She told colleagues that she felt guilty about moving away from them when she started working. Her parents helped her buy a house close to the Countess of Chester Hospital where Lucy worked, and her house was decorated like really simply in childlike decorations, included fluffy toys, fairy lights on her bed frame, which I suppose a lot of adults have.
How old was she?
She's 33 when she was arrested.
No, at the point of getting her own house.
She was working at the hospital, so it was like
in her early 20s.
Yeah.
Yeah, righto.
And she had artwork saying leave sprinkles wherever you go. That's so funny.
I would have had shit like that when I was 21 in my place.
Maybe.
More like motivational, like nothing tastes as good as skinny fish.
That's such a lie, dude.
I just want to say too, she's 2 years older than me.
Is she?
Yeah. I don't know if that's relevant.
But. She has two cats and
red flag. And sorry, I'm totally can you tell I'm nervous about this?
Two cats and was a very social person. She regularly attended salsa dance classes, the gym, and went out with her friends and went on lots of holidays. Mm. She had a pretty fairly normal childhood. And that was absolutely didn't need all those words. and a part-time job during high school. And she was the first member of her family to attend university. When she graduated, her parents put a notice in the local paper to celebrate her graduation.
That's kind of cute.
That is kind of cute.
Although I'm seriously sitting here thinking, like, did her parents severely damage her?
Well, just wait. Her parents supported her throughout the trial. Her father had been staying at her house the night that she was arrested as they'd just got back from a family holiday and he dropped her home. She did live an hour away from her parents, so it wasn't unusual for them to stay.
Right.
He watched her being taken away by the police early that morning. Everywhere described her arrest as her being in a 90 with a jumper, like a sweatsuit over the top.
Sure,
just made me laugh. She just looked like a normal person at 6:30 in the morning. Who'd obviously just got up to answer the door to the police. On other arrests, she was arrested 3 times in total. Her mother pled with the police to take her instead, saying, I did it. Neighbours told the media that her parents were distraught after the arrests. They did relocate from Hereford to Manchester for the whole of the trial. And the mum really wants to move closer to the prison that she's in, but apparently the father doesn't really want to.
Right.
They do have a family business in Hereford where they live that, although retired, they're still part of.
I feel like we need to say if we're laughing, it's
awkward.
Awkward and like sometimes things can be comical but also serious.
Yeah. As Andy Cohen said at the latest Housewife reunion, two things can be true at the same time. Can't believe I roved Andy Cohen into this. Anyway, the parents were in the court every single day to support Lucy, along with one of her best friends and a colleague. However, like Lucy, they weren't present to hear the testimonies of the victim's parents or the sentencing. So they wussed out at the end.
That is fucked.
I know. We'll get to that at the end. There's no obvious signs of distressing or abusive childhood. However, I came across a very interesting post on Reddit where the writer put forward an interesting take that might explain why someone like Lucy, who seemed to have a fairly normal childhood, might become one of the most horrific killers in modern time. Mm. Because no one can find a motive, right? She still claims her innocence to this day. There's no real reason why someone like her
Because a lot of the time serial killers are usually like severely damaged as children. Yeah.
So this is obviously all speculation, but is food for thought. And it did make me think, and you already cottoned onto it basically. Mm. So Lucy was an only child and she had a very close and involved relationship with her parents. Her father attended all of her employment tribunal hearings. Her mother sent her birthday cards from her cats. One was on the fridge and said, "Happy birthday, Mummy." they were reluctant for her to leave home when she went to college, and they even bought her house when she did, which they often stayed at with her. Lucy herself was a NICU baby, and she has said that this is the reason she wanted to become a nurse, specifically a baby NICU nurse. Whilst this might not be unusual, it does indicate that maybe there was a really big focus on this from her parents, as she would not remember the experience herself.
Yeah.
I can understand that happening because I've spoken about the NICU experience with Amelia around, and she now sort of says things about that, but she wouldn't remember that
time. And I can't imagine there's a lot of studies being done on children who have got intense attachment with their parents.
Mm.
Like at some point there has to be separation, right?
Yeah.
And like, yeah, I wonder what the effect on the human psyche is if you never put your baby down or you never allow them to be fully independent. Like, you know, if you have an intense codependence.
Yeah, well, that's what they said. This writer said that basically she might have been treated as a sickly child growing up, idolized as a special child. And being an only child, this may have led to a very codependent relationship where there may have been allowances made for lack of boundaries, and she can do no wrong attitude.
Mm-hmm.
Also, though, led a very sheltered life and a very childlike life.
Yeah.
Or at least she had to continue to exhibit that kind of life in front of her parents because she was a very social person. She went out drinking with her friends. She had a very active life.
And an adult life.
Adult life.
Yeah.
In court, she couldn't admit to knowing what going commando meant in a text exchange with this doctor that she has had a crush on. Oh. They talked about in a real joking way, but in the text it sort of she replied to the comment with like smiley laughing faces. But in the court she basically said she didn't understand it, which it's a real common phrase. Everyone would understand that at like 30-something years old.
Going commando, as in no jocks on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But her parents were in the courtroom, so it's likely that she struggled with presenting anything other than a perfect, innocent, childlike view of the world in their presence.
Oh, that's interesting.
It is known that excessive focus and love for a child, and not just normal love but like excessive, like you were saying, over-the-top love for a child creates a deep self-centeredness, a lack of empathy and ultimately a narcissism traits, particularly in only children who do not have to develop a sharing, caring relationship that naturally occurs in sibling relationships. The writer pondered that maybe Lucy was punished when perceived by her parents as not being perfect, not with abuse but with withdrawal of affection, guilt and shaming. This could explain her fear of disappointing her parents, her need to appear perfect all the time, her all-knowing and arrogance and lack of empathy to anyone outside of herself and her parents.
But then I wonder too if you would have the same effect if you didn't punish at all with anything. If your love, if you continued to shower with love and affection even when they were doing the wrong thing.
It was interesting because a comment on this basically, a lot of people commented on this and one person said, basically the same. Like if she never received any form of punishment or acknowledgement that what she had done was wrong, how would she ever know that what she's doing is wrong or hurtful?
She did at school and in her work.
Yeah, and somebody else commented about that. But there's really nothing in her junior life. And she's well-loved at the hospital, well-loved by her colleagues.
Well, I mean, if she's got a real perfectionist persona, then she would be.
Yeah.
And people pleasers are often well-liked.
Yeah.
That's the whole basis of their personality is being liked.
Exactly. So the writer put she put her, or I don't know if it was a she, they put their motivations for the murders as followed. A fundamental lack of empathy for anyone outside of herself, compounded but not caused by her upbringing. A powerful need to secure attention, sympathy and praise as a replacement of being the constant centre of her parents' world after leaving home. a barely conscious but simmering deep-seated rage and hatred for her own parents and their stifling behaviour and a desire to lash out and punish them for this, using other parents almost as placeholder to enact this rage. Jealousy of other special sickly children diverting attention from her, the true special sickly child. We can see this in her targeting of unusual and special multiple births, as well as a jealousy of the parents for the same reason. She often would look them up on holidays and on like the anniversary of the child's death. And she's written here, this one I'm less certain of, but given her history, I wonder how much of the killing, wonder how much of killing the babies in the same position she was once in was a way of projecting and expressing her own self-loathing and hatred. Anyway.
How would you know if she's going to...
Well, and like she's never going to admit. Gonna deny it. Lucy told the media that her parents worried massively about everything and anything. They hated that she lived alone. I feel bad for them because I know it's really hard for them, especially as I'm an only child. They mean well, just a little suffocating at times and constantly feeling guilty. Her father defended her fiercely and even managed to convince the hospital CEO to allow her to return to the ward in 2017 after she'd been removed from the NICU in 2016. Lucy's father threatened to report the doctors who were against the return to the NICU to the General Medical Council, and they were forced by the hospital administration to write a letter of apology to her, which they did, but they still continued to maintain they didn't want her to return to the unit. The father was, like, convinced of her innocence. We get a bit further into that, but the initial...
Some parents are so blinded by their
blinded. Yeah.
So blinded.
And that I suppose that belief that you don't want to ever see them having do anything wrong.
Yeah.
And that, like, that's a horrific thing to imagine your child to have done.
But, like, I think about it now when I, like, as having a toddler, like, I can totally see her personality flaws.
Yeah, but we're different. I mean, we're different people. Like, maybe their father is a narcissist. Anyway, Lucy was very well liked. She had a number of friends, was adored by her colleagues. She often received messages of support from her colleagues checking in on her when so many babies died on her watch. Her best friend Dawn simply refused to accept her mother's – sorry, accept her friend's guilt. She stated as saying, I grew up with Lucy and not a single thing that I've seen or witnessed of Lucy would let me for a moment believe she is capable of the things she is accused of. It is the most out-of-character accusation that you've ever put against Lucy. Think of the most kind, gentle, soft friend and then that they've been accused of harming babies. Unless Lucy turned around and said, I'm guilty, I will never believe that she's guilty.
Wow.
Dawn's known Lucy since they attended high school together. They spent many nights out and holidays together. They basically had a fun, happy, carefree life. She continues to stand by her statement. Her Facebook page is like full of photos of them together and support.
I could totally understand that experience as a friend. Like imagine having this beautiful friend that you love and who's obviously got good parents and from a good family. Like,
yeah.
And then suddenly finding out that they're like heinous murderer.
I don't know if it makes me like a bad person. There'd be a little bit of me that would just be like, maybe she did.
Well, but I guess it's so conflicting to what you know.
Yeah. It is, yeah. Lucy didn't appear to have many boyfriends in her 20s. During the trial, she did allude to having a boyfriend, but it's thought it wasn't necessarily true and more of a cover to defend herself against the allegations that she had an affair with a married doctor on the ward. It was alleged that some of the murders were to get the attention of Dr. A, who she had a crush on. Dr. A and Lucy often shared supportive messages following the deaths. In the trial podcast, the Lucy Leper trial, all of the messages are read out because they're all read out in trial. So go there. Some of them very interesting.
Do you think she was so sheltered and that she didn't know anything about like sex and adult relationships and stuff?
No, I think she did.
Okay.
Yeah. After Lucy had been removed from the ward, the two continued to meet outside of work for coffee, shopping trips, dinner dates. He even went to their home. They went to London together for a day.
He's married.
Married.
Okay.
Prosecutors described him as her boyfriend, but Lucy insisted that she loved him as a friend, that she was not in love with him. The court was shown many message exchanges between them, which often included love heart emojis when they were planning dates. She continued to claim Dr. A was just a friendship, but he was married. However, when Dr. A appeared in court to give evidence against her, it was the first time during the trial that Lucy was visibly distressed. She tried to leave the doc claiming to feel unwell, but the prosecutor replied, "No, it's because you didn't like hearing your boyfriend giving evidence, did you?" Mm. After her arrest, police found a note in her home with Dr. A's name on it and the phrases, "My best friend, I loved you, I think you knew that, I trusted you with everything, I wanted you to stand by me, but you didn't." Ooh. There were a few occasions when Lucy realized she wouldn't be working with Dr. A when babies would collapse on the shift and she would have to call him to the emergency.
Hang on. So she didn't want him to, or she did?
No, she wanted to work with him, but he wasn't on the shift, so babies collapsed and he had to come because he was the on-call doctor, but he wasn't on the ward. He was in a different area of the hospital. They go into heaps of detail in that other podcast about that. But it's the one downfall, I think, of Lucy was that she had so much love for him, but he just didn't give it back. It literally was a friendship for him.
Okay, yeah.
So her nursing. Lucy graduated from University of Chester in 2012. She did placements at the Liverpool Women's Hospital and the Countess of Chester Hospital. After her graduation, she got a full-time position in the neonatal unit at the Countess of Chester Hospital. A staff profile in 2013 said that she was responsible for caring for a wide range of babies requiring various levels of support and that she enjoyed seeing them progress and supporting their families. She also took part in a campaign that was raised to that raised funds for a new neonatal unit at the hospital. Her photo was used in the campaign. And in 2015, Lucy qualified to work in the NICU. Lucy told others that she liked working in the NICU as she found non-intensive care work boring. It was during this year that the suspicious incidents began.
So how many years has she been nursing by the time she...
Three.
Right. And as far as anyone knows, in those 3 years she didn't kill anyone.
Well, every single baby that Lucy has ever looked after is being investigated now.
Wow.
Yep. But we'll get to that at the end.
Yep.
By June 2015, an informal review was being conducted by a consultant, Ravi Jayaram. He was one of the first people to think that something might have been up. So he and another neonatologist, I've practiced that word so many times this morning, basically revealed troubling details about four unexplained collapses that all occurred in the same unit. Mm-hmm. Lucy was on shift for all four events. Three of those babies died. The consultants reported the deaths to the trust committee responsible for – so the hospitals are called trusts. They have a board attached. They sort of intertwine trust and board, and I'm not sure if it's the same thing or not, but I'm just going with it. So they reported the deaths to the trust committee responsible for serious incidents, who classified them just as medication errors. If they had classified them as not a medication error but as something else, they would have been further investigated.
Can I just say that Redondavort, like that was a medication error and resulted in death.
Yeah.
But yet
four unexplained collapses. So to put in perspective how unusual it is to have four collapses which led to three deaths in 1 month, prior to this they averaged two or three deaths a year.
Right.
The babies also did not respond how they would normally respond to a resuscitation attempt. Usually with these premature babies, when the heartbeat returns, you would normally see improvement in breathing, and this just didn't happen. The two consultants who were the most suspicious of Lucy told investigating officers that infant collapses were usually explainable and nearly always expected.
Yeah.
Because NICU babies don't just die. Or if they do, you know they're going to die.
Yeah, that's right.
Like you know they're sick.
Yeah.
You know, you're expecting something to happen.
You're expecting that they're going to deteriorate.
Yeah. So Lucy starts in the early 2015. By June 2015, there's already suspicions raised about stuff happening, right? In October 2015, the NUM conducted her own review and Lucy was the only member consistently on shift for all unexplained collapses and deaths. Concerns were raised to management but were continually ignored by the executive team.
Jesus.
February 2016, many consultants and neonatologists concluded a review investigating five unexplained deaths and collapses. The only common factor they could find?
Lucy
Letby. A meeting was called in May 2016 with the lead neonatologist, the NUM, the hospital's medical director and the director of nursing. The executive team deemed the spike in deaths just to be coincidental and no action was taken.
Are these medical people?
Mm-hmm. They're all medical people. The doctors and nurses and the medical director.
Yeah, yeah, but so the all of them decided it was fine.
Yeah. So a nationwide – this is completely unrelated to the hospital, but a nationwide project found that the neonatal deaths were 10% higher than expected during June 2015 and June 2016 and that the mortality rate in 2015 was double that of the previous year.
Right.
So I assume they must investigate those things regularly anyway.
And they'll get reported in and like get, the – yeah. You know, like we have whatever. The Bureau of Statistics and stuff, yeah.
Late June 2016, so a year after the first suspicions, there'd been seven unexpected deaths within the unit. Executives were of the belief that Lucy's involvement was mostly circumstantial and believed some of the doctors were on a witch hunt for her. She was, however, moved from the NICU to the Hospital Risk and Patient Safety Office. Ironic. they did meet to discuss whether to involve – so the executive team met to discuss whether to involve law enforcement based on the consultant's push. And
so they moved her out for her protection?
Well, they moved her out because there was a lot of pressure from the consultants and neonatologists saying it's too much.
Yeah, it's too – yeah.
Yeah. So they basically.
But the hospital directors were still like, no.
No, it's just circumstantial. They met to decide whether to involve law enforcement, but were concerned, of course, about the potential harm to the trust's reputation from a police inquiry. So they did not engage the police. Interesting to note that after Lucy was moved, the collapses and deaths stopped.
Of course they did.
So a review was organised through the Royal College of Paediatric and Child Health. Uh huh. But there was one article that I read that someone, and I don't know, but it was from within the hospital, said, well, maybe after Lucy was moved, the person doing the killer just stopped so they could put blame on Lucy.
Yeah, right.
Okay, all right, maybe. Yeah, are they that smart?
If you're trying to kill, if you want to kill.
If you're a killer, you kill.
You're not going to exactly. stop.
However, yeah, so they organised, hospital organised a review through the Royal College of Paediatric and Child Health. However, they were restricted with what they could review and it excluded investigating Lucy's actions or the deaths but focused on the unit's general service. The report basically was inconclusive around the reason for the increased mortality rate but found that there was often insufficient staffing and senior cover. The report did recommend a detailed case review of each death. A neonatologist carried out these reviews of the deaths, however, was given very little time and so only gave a brief summary but did identify that four cases potentially could benefit from local forensic review of the circumstances and the personnel involved. Mm-hmm. So after that review was conducted, the hospital started to change their services and they no longer accommodated premature births before 32 weeks. I might add, and I haven't put this in here, but I did read a lot that the hospital often had issues with the sewerage because there's all this talk about the environment being the problem, like that okay. there wasn't safe hand hygiene, that sewerage often was overflowing onto the wards,
what?
And that maybe some of these babies died from infection caused by the environment. But, again, that couldn't be proved either.
Right, well then.
So in yeah. September of 2016, so...
And you'd be able to tell if it was toxins.
Yeah, that's right. So in September 2016, Lucy raised a formal grievance about being moved away from the clinical area and that was upheld by the board in 2017. Her dad had a lot to play in that. Mm. determining that it had been orchestrated by consultants with no hard evidence. The board supported her return to the neonatal unit and offered her a placement at Alderhay Children's Hospital in Liverpool. They also supported her to develop advanced practice or a master's degree. The hospital was like, oh, we're so sorry. In the The CEO met with Lucy and her parents and apologised on behalf of the trust and assured them that the doctors who made the allegations would be dealt with. He ordered the consultants to send a letter of apology to Lucy, which happened in February of 2017 after the board.
But they'd be like, we haven't had a baby die the whole time you've been gone.
Yeah.
Like, how could they apologise to her? They did the right thing. How many lives would they have saved? Like, by having her off the ward for that time.
In March of 2017, the consultants requested management involve police on the advice of the neonatal lead who suggested further investigations from that thing 6 months prior.
Yep.
At the end of April 2017, they met with the Cheshire Constabulary. I guess that's just the police, isn't it? and then Lucy returned to work at the start of May. The senior investigating officer said the initial focus was around the hypotheses of what could have occurred. So generic hypotheses of it could be natural occurring deaths, it could be naturally occurring collapses, it could be organic reason, it could be a virus. And then one of the hypotheses was obviously that it could be inflicted harm. Mm-hmm. The investigation began with examination of medical files of 17 babies who died and the non-fatal collapses of 16 more babies, some of whom had life-changing injuries from this. Tens of thousands of medical files were reviewed by expert neonatologists, independent of the hospital. Mm-hmm. This expert responded in December of 2017 and basically stated that the deaths were of natural causes. So therefore, Operation Hummingbird commenced, which is what they called this investigation.
Right.
Each child had their own detective and team investigating their death or attempted death.
Yeah.
They investigated without conferring with the other teams, and this was to ensure that the pattern could be determined independently and not seen to prejudice each other. Mm-hmm. That's probably the best thing I think about this, and that's why it costs so much to do, and that's why it took them years to be able to bring her to arrest, right? Because they – you think of the number of babies, you think of a medical file that, you know, these babies have to go through. Then you have to rule out
the amount of contacts each baby would have had while in their time in the NICU. Yeah. Well, I mean, potentially, depending on how long they were there.
Yeah. But also, even if they were only there 24 hours, they had to look at all the pathology.
Stuff.
Look at what, like, could this child have died from? What could it have been? Mm-hmm. Like, do we know that it was air in the stomach? Could that have happened
every child autopsy?
I don't know the answer to that. Yeah. I think most were.
Yeah.
Yeah. So at the end of the day, the only consistency within each death and collapse, Lucy Letby. June of 2018, so we're talking 6 months later, Lucy was officially.
This is now 3 years after.
The very first suspicion. Yep. Lucy was officially declared the suspect and was arrested for the very first time. She was bailed a month later while the investigation continued. She was arrested again in June of 2019 on suspicion of 8 counts of murder and 9 counts of attempted murder.
So what happened after she was bailed?
Yeah, so she was bailed, and then she was bailed 3 days after that 2019 one.
Yep.
They rearrested her in 2019 after the first year, because I suppose you can't keep her in jail unless you have enough evidence, right?
Oh, they were so they still couldn't charge
investigating her. No, they just
well, they needed
to question. They arrested
bailed.
Her to question her, so she spent a month being questioned, and they were gathering evidence from her home because you think they haven't gone into her home.
Yeah.
So then she was rearrested in June of 2019 because by that time another 3 cases of attempted murder had been added.
And she was still working?
List. No.
Okay.
Oh, I actually don't know, but I don't think so.
Okay.
And they wanted to re-question her. They also wanted to see if she'd written anything further. So one of the things that they found in her home when they arrested her was so much evidence, right? So much evidence. God. So she kept a lot of handover sheets stuffed in bags, hidden under beds, in drawers, over 257 handover sheets.
What?
She was a meticulous diary keeper, which will come a bit later.
Yeah.
There's also bits of paper and post-it notes just all over her home. What? One particular post-it note, which was found in her diary, which had handwriting like scrawled all over it, basically said, "I don't deserve to live. I killed them on purpose because I'm not good enough to care for them. I am evil. I did this." That was in capital letters. Notes were very messy, scrawly, looked like someone who was like spiraling. It's like if you've come home from a shift and you're like, she just had to write it all down and she's just scrawled all over it. And like one of them had hate written in big letters, like literally over the top and just like circled. Like, like you're just dumping shit, right? We could probably put a photo up.
This is getting so good.
Her Facebook, so it looked like someone who was spiraling. Some of the notes referred to her not coping, that she didn't deserve her parents, that she was not good enough, and even wanting to kill herself.
Yeah.
Her Facebook data showed that she repeatedly searched for victims' parents, even on Christmas Day, the anniversary of the deaths. She sent a sympathy card to one of the victims as well, which I'll get to a bit later. It was also discovered that Lucy falsified medical records. She covered her tracks. She changed the times of collapses, making sure she couldn't be placed at the scene. Besides all the hospital handover sheets I found at the home, there were also like bits of paper towel all over the place with like notes of medication written on it for one of the babies. And within her diary was the initials of babies that were killed on the exact days they died. So she kept diaries like literally everything that she did. She, and I'm not talking diary as in like dear diary, as in like a calendar diary.
Yeah, yeah.
Of everything that she had to do, of shifts, of everything. And when she'd done it, she ticked it off.
Wow.
So, the initials, I feel like that means a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Too.
I mean, I think.
That is evidence. Like that is.
And even if you had a child die or a person die on your shift, you wouldn't go home and like document it in their diary that had someone die that day.
I've literally written one like story that I've kept from a bad death that I experienced at work, like, and that was like something, and it wasn't even, that's literally all I've ever documented about work ever.
Yeah,
like, and that's like locked away for no one's eyes in case one day I get subpoenaed to court. Like, that's, and because nurses tell you horror stories about having to go back in cases and having to remember details.
Yeah,
that's the only time I've ever been a part of something like that where I've had to, I felt like I needed to remember the story. What happened? But that's totally abnormal behavior. Yeah.
Among some of the other notes were phrases like, "I'm sorry that you couldn't have a chance at life."
God,
like all, and like when you see them, you think you're not a well person.
Do you know, it's really like mixed me now inside because she seems to be so remorseful and almost at the.
I don't find that remorseful.
I guess not.
I don't see that as remorse. I see that as like her brain, like an internal thought process. She's angry at herself and she's angry. I don't think she's remorseful for killing anyone.
Really?
No. Maybe because I know the rest of it, but I don't I don't see her as – I don't see that as her being remorseful. I just see that as like someone who's got some kind of psychotic thing and she's had to like blurt it all out on the paper. Just because you say I don't deserve to live doesn't mean that you're remorseful. Just means
no. I guess I don't know that.
I feel like if she was remorseful, she would accept that she did it and
I guess
you know show I guess some level
more
of
about, like she's obviously very conflicted. Maybe that's the word I'm looking for.
Maybe she's just very sick.
Well, that's
Or just
you
a
have
bad
to be.
Person.
I feel like you absolutely have
you
to
have
be
to have something
sick in the fucking head.
We're going to leave part one of Lucy Letby there. We'll pick it back up next week with more about the investigation. If you have enjoyed what you've listened to, make sure you go follow us on Instagram at Two Humorous Nurses Podcast, or leave some comments on the thread in our private Facebook group. Just search up Two Humorous Nurses Podcast. Send us an email, hello@twohumorousnurses.com, and we hope you've enjoyed the deep dive so far. Bye.